This is Sarah Milligan with the Kentucky Historical Society. It is February 23rd, 2008, and I'm here in Mount Sterling, forgetting my name by the end of the day. And I'm doing interviews with World War II veterans, and right now I'm speaking with Mr. James Turley, and his daughter, Belinda Cook, is sitting in with us. So, first of all, give me a little bit of information. Where were you born? When were you born?
I was born in Bass County, Kentucky, August the 28th to
1925. Now, since we're doing interviews on World War II, what was your first experience with World War II? How did you become involved with World War II?
Well, my uncle was on the board, and I was working for him.
On the draft board?
And I thought that he would probably get me out because I was doing hemp and they needed it, and he could have done it easy, but I went over and told him to go ahead.
You were farming hemp. Is that what it was?
Huh?
You were farming hemp?
Yeah, it's helping you on his farm, wasn't it? So, I told him to go ahead and call me.
How old were you then?
I was 18.
18,
yeah.
So you were old enough to make that decision for yourself.
Yeah.
So when you told him to enlist you, what happened then? What was the next step?
Well, he just called me up, and I went to Great Lakes, Green Bay for basic training. I think that was 6 weeks. And they sent me to Memphis to a school where they trained you in code. We were doing some firing too. We were training to be airmen, radio gunners on an airplane.
So what branch of the military were you in?
In the Navy.
The Navy.
Navy Air Force.
The Air Force. So you were being trained to be a gunman?
Well, we did gunning and mostly radio, Morse code. And they were 6 months of that, and I think it was a couple of 3 weeks of radar training. And then we were sent to Miami for gunnery school. We did a lot of firing, and it's damaged my hearing. 10 or 12 years ago, I was declared 40% deaf, and I went back last week, I think it was, and said it was much worse, but they didn't give a percentage.
And they
I might get hearing aids, but the third time I've been told the hearing aids won't help me.
And they think that's because of your gunnery?
Yeah, there was no question about it, was most of it, because I never worked around. And Specialist in Dayton told me that before I told him I'd fired a lot of guns, then only two things would cause my type of hearing loss was this fever of young age or a noise. And so that's what I've been drawn 40% disability for 10 or 12 years.
Because of your hearing loss?
Yeah, and I've lost a lot more. The girl that took my last test a week ago said hearing aids wouldn't help me, but I'd lost a lot of hearing since I fired.
Mm-hmm. So when you went from basic training where you learned Morse code and radar technology, is that right? Where did you go from there? Where did they send you?
They sent me to Florida for 6 more weeks of mostly firing guns.
Mm-hmm. And then from Florida, where did you go?
I went up and down the West Coast.
California, Oregon?
I went to Hopeville and in out of San Diego and Northern California, a couple of times. We moved around a lot.
What were your duties?
Huh?
What were your duties while you were there?
Well, they didn't do much of anything. It more or less turned the pilots feather.
During the what?
Training the pilots.
Oh, training the pilots.
Imagine, I think it called us the lost squadron because we never seemed to stay over very long.
The lost squadron.
There was a squadron speaking. I don't know what the officer said. He didn't say nothing.
How many people were in your squadron?
About 30.
30?
Yeah.
Wow. So you went in about 1944, is that correct?
I think it was. I misplaced my discharge, but I figured about out of June of September of 43 and got out about 11:45.
And
43. We had the training mishaps. I was on a plane and the engine went dead in over the Everglades. Nobody ever made a safe landing in the Everglades. But fortunately, we coasted home.
Oh my gosh.
And made a nice landing. And once it was hit with a firebomb and a smoke bomb, and the tranny got struck in the cow engine. People in the other place were all for us to bail out, but we didn't.
When you were in Florida training?
Yeah, most people killed training probably than was during the war. Overall.
Realistically?
I think I'm right, but I don't know that I have that data, but I know it was high.
Yeah. Were you ever scared while you were in training?
I was a little scared when our plane quit. Because you weren't flying very high.
Oh, gosh.
Those things were glad for a long plane.
Were you flying the plane or was somebody else?
No, I was a radio gunner.
You were a radio gunner.
Climbing a turn machine gun. That's where I lost my hearing. Mainly shooting shotguns was what we trained by.
Really?
It is the same lag factor, whether you're firing a machine gun or a shotgun.
Oh, I didn't know that. So from Florida, when you did training, you went to the West Coast,
yes.
And you just hopped up and down the coast.
Yeah, we was in Hopeville and in out of. I opened an order in California, two or three places.
Well, where did you go from California? What did you do after you got done?
Well, we got on a ship and we stopped at Pearl Harbor briefly.
Briefly?
Yeah. And then we was on the Pan A one time. We were going from one island to the other. And the Pan A had played a factor some years before the war. The Japanese had sunk the Pan A up around Korea, I think. And it was just another ship called the Pan A, but people don't know the history of the Pan A. And then we got on another aircraft carrier and finally transferred to. And it was actually, we actually named it AMSIO.
Which is what your hat says, the USS AMSIO.
This carrier had a great history of sinking subs, but that was when it was the Coral Sea.
Uh-huh.
And I'd guess, now, I'd live in here, but undoubtedly, they wanted to make one of their capital ships the Coral Sea. It turned out to be a great victory, I think. And so they downgraded us to Arizona, to the AMSIO.
They downgraded your ship.
Well, it's, that's what had happened. That's the thing you see on here. But I hadn't read it nowhere, but I know it was the Coral Sea because some of them had been on there while it was the Coral Sea.
Oh, so it was the same ship.
They changed the name is what they did.
They just changed the name.
And we done in our sub work looking for submarines and never found any. And it flew off the carrier. Might be interesting to some people to teach a little short carrier. So he had a tail hook. It hooked a cable.
Mm-hmm.
that's what stopped you. And you shot you off. Catapulted.
You catapulted the catapulted the planes off the ship, and when you landed on the ship, it caught the cable and stopped you.
And then if you're going real fast, they drop the cables and let you hit the barrier. It couldn't just stop you. It's like you hit the wall.
Right.
It's kind of interesting the way they could drop those barriers to put it on your speed if you're coming in.
Were you ever worried you were going to go off the end of the boat?
No, I don't think we had any problems with that. We always had a problem landing. It wrecked me once or twice.
Really? What was that like?
Well, the first one, the fellow was three in the plane. They put two radio operators in this plane. They must have had more than they had. First, they had an ordnance up there.
Mm-hmm.
I was flying in a turret, the safest part of the plane. But the first time he had a bad landing, he just broke the tail wheel, drug down the runway, and put us back up. And my fellow that flew with me, there has been a pilot himself, and he said, let me ride in the turret. He did the safest place, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I never thought I'd think about it. And when he came in the next time, he came in way too fast, hit the ground, bounced up there, went down the runway, wings are hitting, and come off the runway. I got a picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept it upright. He was supposed to loop, and it was out of range. The worst place on the plane, but.
Did it scare you?
You know, it really, I didn't exactly panic, just to scare some, but you know, you're young, you think you're indestructible, I guess.
When you were 18.
Yeah, and I think I should have been more scared when the plane quit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seemed calm.
So what else did you see while you were out in the Pacific?
Well, about the only thing we did, of course, is you was looking, you was in desert with kamikazes.
Mm.
And
Did you have any encounters with kamikazes?
No, I never actually had enough firmness in me. We had some fun. It's kind of cruel, I guess, but we fired some ships to Korea and flew over Korea. And they was out there on the ocean, along the ocean lakes or something, and on these boats, you know how they're all fishing boats.
Mm-hmm.
And we fought the machine guns for it, of course, they weren't really far. And they had waved their flags.
They waved their flags.
White flag.
Oh! When you
did you
come down and buzz them a little bit?
I don't remember the pilot buzzing, but we fly low.
And they were scared. Those poor Korean fishermen just out there trying to feed their families.
That's very sad to see. That's a funny encounter. Well, it wasn't funny, but. They always put you in chipping paint or something, but it wants to keep you a little bit busy.
Yeah.
And I had this big spray gun, spraying around, and then it sprayed it down the bend. That paint out on the next floor.
So you're spraying the deck.
Yeah. You can't buzz it up there. Somebody said, it's all kind of help. It's like, sorry, we'll actually. I was a petty officer, they called me.
Yeah.
And I got a little trouble there, but the pilots protected us.
The pilots protected you?
The officers, everybody, all the squad. See, they had six-ray destroyers protecting us and about 800 crewmen. And the only reason it was out there was to protect the squadron.
Right, and that's where you
and
were.
We were kind of like the elite, you know. Had our own office, but they could still his piece could still rest you or whatever, but he'd get us off him that he had pilots. I think one fellow stole a Jeep or something and run to the ditch and ain't ever done nothing to him. See, they got $100,000 invested in each one of us.
Oh, gosh, yeah, $100,000 invested.
Hard to get rid of nobody.
That's right.
You never have to.
So you all were kind of the mischief makers, I guess, it sounds like.
We could get by with a lot.
What were some of the things that you got away with?
Well, it wasn't me personally involved, but we was in Hopeville.
Hopeville?
Hopeville, California. And it blazing hot there, one of those places. And we had a big long barge, and some other people down there kept coming through our wolf and then the air conditioners. Going to the chow or whatever, it just threw them, and people got tired of it. And then turned the lights out and put the fire extinguisher on some of them.
Oh no, they sprayed him with a fire extinguisher for walking through their offices?
I guess it was water, I don't know. And they broke up the wolf and shrew, I guess. And I was always messing up some way. Just one thing we did was you would take and look through the bore of your machine gun and attempt it out there. You line it up there, and then you lined up the sights to get them in sync. And I did that, and then you were supposed to shoot up over a track where they had a cross to see if it worked out. Well, I blowed the template up. Instead of shooting up there, I shot at the template where it's lining up. Well, they hammered over up there, raising the hand. He said, "When I used to fly with you, you ought to probably shoot your wing off your plane."
Fortunately,
they wouldn't shoot the cylinders, keep from hitting your wing, but he knew that. But it was just funny somehow. When I was in boot camp, I was raised in a family where you didn't use dirty words. You never heard one. If you did, you get it. We're in busting. And I couldn't find my hat. I come out of the hood like that. And it, of course, I had to send off the chief. "Where's your hat?" I said, "I couldn't find it." They all just alike, so anybody can grab your hat.
Yeah.
He says, "Go get your dress hat, bottle of ice." And I hear that word, well, my house was here every day now. That type of thing.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like I was single out somehow. They'd come in and give you the marks and boot camps and any little thing. The chief is in there dishing out a bunch of demerits, and he gave one to my friend demerits, and I laughed about it. And he gave me demerits. I just stand there for an hour for his rest the rifle as punishment.
You had to stand out holding
rifle.
Holding your rifle. Oh, gosh.
It's just a little funny things that happen on the land, too, right?
So. Were you worried about it when you signed up? When you told your uncle, "All right, sign me up, I'm ready to go," were you worried that you were going
to
be shipped off somewhere?
Everybody wanted to go.
Everybody wanted to go?
It was a bad night here.
What was the feeling behind that? What made you want to go?
I don't know. It's just teenage stuff.
Just because you're young? I mean, you weren't worried about, you know.
I was excited about getting killed.
Getting killed. That's, yeah. Did you have friends you know that went, that enlisted as well?
Pardon?
Do you have friends at the time that enlisted with you?
No, but I followed Judge Bailey was here all the way across the country.
Really? Was that just a coincidence?
Well, I joined him in the... He told me to tell you, you know, the interviewer and ask what you want. You don't get it all the time, but Yeah. Your preference as you get out of boot camp. And he wrote me and told me to tell him that I can copy Morse code. That's what's what is required anyway, which I did, because he didn't know what it did or not. I don't know if they, but they had told us before the Air Force was pretty well filled up. You'd waste a choice if you did it, but I did it anyway, and I got it.
There you go.
And I followed him to Memphis and followed him to Florida and got us together on the West Coast. He's lives, and we both went to school together.
Here in the, not here though. You weren't here though. You weren't in Montgomery County, didn't school together.
I lived in Bath then, actually, because I was born in Bath County.
Bass County, right.
I'm a line early.
How did you?
It's Stepstone.
Excuse me?
A place called Stepstone or Saltwell County in the country.
Right. How did you end up in Montgomery County?
Well, my mom moved there later while I was in the service. My dad died while I was in the service. Just after I got out of the service, he got sick.
How long were you in the service?
Something over 2 years, but 2 years, 3 or 4 months.
2 years.
You had to wait a while to get enough points to get out. We was out on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Just waiting for points. Now, I probably could have got out several months earlier. We had an overseas address somehow. They didn't know at the station where you discharged me when you went overseas. I know, kept secret.
Oh.
Even a, it wasn't on the record he had anyway. Somebody know.
Yeah.
I could have told him all the time I had overseas post office. I was overseas. It got out 3 months earlier, but I didn't know at the time.
That's lucky. So what happened when the war ended? You know, you came in at the tail end, and then the next year it ended. What was that like? What were people's reactions?
There were so many. There were so many getting out that you didn't focus on the press or anything on the individual about that, unless they did something spectacular. But we were treated awful nice, and people keep complaining they didn't do enough. They sent me to college on the GI Bill, which I never could have gone.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Cumberland. It was a 2-year college in Williamsburg, and then to UK in journalism.
Great.
Then I went to work eventually for paper. And I, in my mid-20s, I was the youngest daily editor of a daily newspaper.
Which newspaper?
In the state. Pikeville.
Pikeville newspaper?
Daily News. Pikeville Daily News.
Huh.
And then I went to the Social Security Administration and finally went to Baltimore, managing Catonville, Baltimore, Catonville, Social Security Office.
So would you say joining the military in 1944 was a good experience or a bad experience?
Well, for my own personal view, I think, well, of course, I'd never gone to college. Out the GI Bill and everything. I don't know if I could, but I don't believe it. We went to the Depression and War both. And it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you came back, when did you get married or have kids? Obviously, you have children since one of them's sitting right here.
Well, you would be surprised. I was looking for a job. I was offered a couple of jobs, and I got a journalism. And I went in, and the girl was closing the newspaper office, locking it up. And I really went up to her, CINS, and somebody played basketball. And while I was there, I was checking about a job with the newspaper. And she said, they're looking at somebody, so I stayed overnight, and they gave me a job. If she had closed up 2 minutes earlier, I never stayed in Pikeville. And that's where I got married.
That's how you met, right there.
Well, I wouldn't have been there if she would have closed the office
right,
earlier.
Right, right.
because I didn't think it was going to stay overnight to start with.
Yeah. It's amazing how those things happen.
I just went over to CINS play ball.
And there you are.
Yeah. I might have had job mine too, I don't know. But if they did, I don't know why I got there so late.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I might have stopped at some of the other places along the way.
That's a good point.
Tell her about how you and Mom got married. How fast you got married and everything.
Yeah, see if that's got anything to do with it. We just did. You had that wedding period in Kentucky. I just went over to Virginia and got married.
It's close by. Virginia's close.
Well, a lot of people did that. They didn't want to fool around. If you ever get married, go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a waiting period in Kentucky or something.
Yeah.
You had to have blood. Yeah. There's a little waiting period.
So it was right over Virginia land there.
Yeah, it is. Well, is there any other experiences from while you were in World War II? Did you go to interesting places that you remember? Did you spend most of your time in the water? What else was part of your experience there?
Well, we used to go down into Mexico, Hopeville, and visit around. I could have went to Rose Bowl, but I don't know why I didn't. I think we could have got tickets.
To the Rose Bowl?
People wouldn't travel much at the time.
Oh. Is that because of the rations, gas rations, and things like that? People weren't traveling?
I think it was limited travel in those days. Can you travel like you do now? You have to fly around often. Everything was different then. You have to read the... I understand the impression you need to read Grapes of Wrath.
What's easier to read than Grapes of Wrath?
It describes a depression.
Oh, right. John Steinbeck.
I remember dust storms, and I could hardly see the sun. And it blew away open.
Yeah, it did.
People had it rough in them days. I hope it was all happy.
That people think that you were all happy?
Nobody had any money about anything. You worked for a dollar a day if you could find any work.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to find nothing.
You were pretty young when that was going on, weren't you?
Well, yeah. It actually went on. The depression didn't stop the war. Well, it helped some. My dad sprayed the gardens.
Yeah.
For the government.
Yeah. And before the war, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there were no jobs. And of course, the bugs eat everything up.
Yeah.
It seemed like a little bit of hot weather.
Tell her about Uncle Adrian.
Who?
Your brother.
I had a brother who was the first or best, the number one hero in the county. I think it was two of them had the same thing. He had three Purple Hearts.
Wow.
Adrian B. Turley. And two Bronze Stars for bravery.
Wow. Well, was he?
I think there's one other in the county had that.
Is he your older brother? Or you?
Yeah, just about 16 months older than me.
So what did he get those awards for?
Well, you get Purple Hearts for wounds. He was wounded three times. And Bronze Stars for bravery. Bravery under fire, I reckon.
Did you ever ask him what those experiences?
He shot my leg, I know. And I don't know exactly how. The bottle exploded close to him and covered him up. I've heard this story so much, I don't believe it last time, but I think he had told the truth about it. The bottom had covered a man up. Next door, they come digging him out. He said, "Get this man over here." He said, "He's getting him out right now. He's dead." That's the only thing they were talking about the war.
The person next to him was dead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very close to him.
Hmm.
He brought it home. swastika.
Yeah.
Flags and German flags.
So he was in Germany. He was based in Germany or in and around Germany.
Yeah.
In Europe.
Yeah.
Wasn't he in the Battle of the Bulge?
I don't think so, but he never told me about the Battle. And I know he fought because he said, let me try it three times.
So what did your parents think about both of you all joining the military? I assume he was very young, too.
Well, I didn't think so at the time, but of course it were. Well, they never offered no advice that I can remember. They knew I'd go.
Really?
Everybody went.
Your brother was already gone when you enlisted,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
They were complaining about it. I never could understand it. They fought for 5 or 6 years in the war. I don't want to damn the soldiers, but now if they serve over 6 months, they feel like they're supposed to come home. Nobody mm-hmm. came home during World War II.
Yeah.
About 6 years. Some of them, they always used to train troops, and some of them did all the fighting there, just a portion of them. I flew in a torpedo plane, TBMs, and we never got to see much action as far as attacking anything. But Torpedo Squadron 8, ought to be statues built to them, attacked the German fleet. I was a Wasp and a Hornet and probably the Big E, and he shot down the whole squadron.
Uh-huh.
Only one fellow survived, it was a fellow by the name of Ensign Gay. He's the only survivor of the squadron. And the two other squadrons lost over 2 or 3 planes, he shot the whole thing down. and it wasn't even coordinated, but the dive bombers come along. Destroyed the Japanese Navy after the fire planes come down to sink, to shoot the TBMs down or send pigeons. It's actually a suicide plane, just like the Germans, pretty much. That's about the Japs, I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's right up there from my time to the Charge of the Light Brigade. That was terrible, brutal. The planes going in. Frankly, no, they'd be shot down already.
Gosh.
I've heard different stories, but I think fire planes would come down to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd left sky above open and bombers. So, 3 or 4 of the Japanese new carriers actually destroyed their fleet. It's been portrayed, but not in proper context, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. And that you experienced part of that?
No, we never attacked nothing.
Right.
We were looking for submarines out.
So your boat was mostly around like Korea, in that area of the ocean?
Yeah, I never did know for sure where we were. I never went to Korea. We
yeah.
didn't get off there though. We was in Guam. Hawaii, straight out of Guam, the fighting didn't stop there. That's about it. I just got to tell him. I got back real quick because we were going to carry. We didn't have to look for transportation.
Right, you were already. Yeah, you were already on your.
Unfair. Didn't
yeah.
kick us off, put the fetters on, but it didn't do
it. Yeah. Well, you made it back. Well, Belinda, was there anything that you wanted to talk about? I know you.
He's told me several. I can't think of anything else that he's told me that.
So you learned Morse code. You got to shoot guns a lot in training, and they tried to keep you out of trouble when you were stuck on a ship in the Pacific. They tried to keep you all occupied so you'd stay out of trouble.
Yeah, well, you see stories forever about them chipping paint or repainting. Well, it didn't need paint. They wanted to keep somebody out. And there's one thing I ought to put on the record, I guess, is I'm not sure which island we're on. Probably Guam. They're putting on a program. And it was ridiculous the way they offered. It didn't have nothing to do with what the officers needed. They'd block off a whole section, even if there's only three or four officers there.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be standing. And I thought it was, well, I forget, one of the stars was putting on a program.
Oh.
And their soldiers, sailors were standing everywhere, and these big blockers, just a few officers there. They block off 10 or 20 times what they need. It's the prestige thing. It's got nothing to do with seating.
Yeah.
And he said, fill that up. But nobody did because he was against the rules. And he said, there aren't going to be no problem until you fill the stands. And I Rupp said, I fool with it. It was Bob Hope, but that's Eddie Bracken. And I still don't know. But anyway, they filled it up. But the board ship was for our squadron, they just had one little toilet. And on the next floor, if I'm mistaken, they had a nice toilet, but that was for visiting officers. They had their own. And we were not permitted to use it. It gets crammed up in this one little bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I used it anyway, but there was never nobody there. It was plumb taken.
It was just for visiting officers.
And that was typical. At Great Lakes, you go to the movies and have some wheel in the corner, and their necks look that and look 2 foot long. You know from that area?
Uh-huh.
It was no good. What a big section, maybe 200 seats, blocked off officers, maybe three or four there.
Oh, gosh, 200 seats and only three or four officers.
Is that kind of thing? It had nothing to do with seating.
Yeah.
It's just I don't know what the reason for that was exactly, but they just showed their power, I reckon, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the same as them yelling at you at boot camp.
We were expecting boot camp, but after we got out, we started to get a little more respect. It was just a complaint I had. One time I was on vacation, you know, I mean, on leave. You
yeah.
never call that vacation. It sounded like a civilian. You can tell how long after it had been. You can tell somebody out of boot camp that where their hat was caked as far as his old socks had gone. And I put my hat back like this, and the MPs give me a citation. They had to go before the captain because he didn't do nothing. It just pushed it back like that.
Just kind of pushed it back on top of your head?
Yeah, maybe put it back. I don't know. That guy's in a park or something. And the captain said, well, turn you loose, you're a prisoner at large. That's just a matter of language, you know. You just run around like you always did.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing about it was they gave me a pistol and told me to stand guard. I said, that's first time I ever heard a prisoner at large stand guard with a pistol.
That's true. Consider yourself a prisoner. Here's your weapon.
When I went to high school, I only worked 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and I was a good friend of one of the board, and he sent me a diploma, which I never went for 3 years. So.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to Carver College, and they never asked about no transcript or nothing.
Really?
And I got to UK, and they said, you got to have transcript. This graduation don't mean anything. I said, well, you're right. I didn't do it, and they started kicking me out, and I went and got it, and so I was glad to really take more courses, you know. But when they seen this, they said, give me credit for what a gift for calisthenics.
Please
get your PE. Yes, I got that. It took what they called a 5-year course in 6 months in electronics and mainly Morse code.
Uh-huh.
And you give it credit, I had like more credit than I need when I got out of there.
That's good. Oh.
I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
Well, I know you've got the UK game coming up.
Yeah, we better go. I've got a plumber might be showing up.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. I'm going to...
Really?